Captain's log, stardate 41294.5. Our destination, the Class M Beta Cassius planet known simply as Haven. It is a world so renowned for its peaceful beauty that some believe it to have mystical healing powers. We will rest and relax. All too briefly, I fear.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Penske File. We are watching Star Trek The Next Generation. This is our Let's Watch. It is Season 1, Episode 11. This is called Haven. Episode called Haven. I feel like there was some reference there that it could pin down. But you're in for a good treat. This is another episode with Mr. Modi Operandis. We are going to discuss this episode after this little break, and we get into it a pretty decent amount, so I'm not going to go over the plot too much, but safe to say, this is the episode that introduces Loxana Troi and has a little bit of a wedding thing going on. It's got a little bit of a plague thing. It's going to be hard to come up with a description for this to fit in a Twitter 140 characters when I send this thing out, but safe to say, Haven is one of the episodes of the first season. It's hard to say anything else about it, but I'll get into that later on with Modi. So let's get over this. This is Season 1, Episode 11. It was directed by Richard Compton, teleplay by Tracy Torme, and the story credit goes to Tracy Torme and Lan O'Koon. This originally aired November 30th, 1987. And it's something. This episode is something. So after this break, welcome Mr. Modi Operandis and I to you, I guess. Do we welcome you to? Whatever. We'll get into it after the break. Thanks.
Captain, even Zeno never had such thoughts about me. You may energize.
That was meant as a joke, Captain.
I was not amused.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Penske File. We're back here with Haven. This is one of the episodes of Star Trek The First Generation. It's episode 11 of season 1 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It is called Haven. And we've got a special guest. We're joined once again by Modi Operandis. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. Good to have you back. I think the first episode was a success, and it's nice to have things like that keep going in the future.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, Haven, you watched this recently?
Haven. Yeah, I just watched it last night.
Yeah, I just watched it about, I just stopped watching it about 10 minutes ago. So, it's fresh in my mind.
Good Lord. Yeah. Need to digest that one for a minute.
Yep. So,
yeah.
I guess, how would you, let's see, what was the best, how would you describe this episode in one word?
Oh, no, I can describe it with a line from the episode. At the very end, Picard's last line was, "I was not amused." I think that sums up the episode for me, I think.
That's a better answer than the one word thing. Just, he wasn't amused, and apparently he wasn't thinking filthy thoughts about Loxana Troi.
He was not thinking at all. There were some weird things that he was doing. was strange.
This is a episode I would, before we get into it, it's an episode that I think I would hold up for the acting ability of Patrick Stewart, because he has a lot of garbage in this episode, and he actually he actually plays it off kind of well. Like when
he was the funniest part of this, actually.
Yeah, he was.
He was the only funny thing in the episode, I think.
His little scenes where when he first brings the Troys into their apartment, and he kind of leaves and like walks out the door backwards, it's a legitimately funny episode. Or at least in terms of him acting, but
his performance is hilarious. Yeah,
he's very good. And other than that, he's got garbage this entire episode. But
nothing good.
His acting ability certainly carries it through. So this is Haven is famous basically for introducing Loxana. This is who's the mother of Deanna Troi. She's a full Betazoid. So she is like full telepathic abilities. Deanna Troi is only half Betazoid. Her father was human, so she's not as telepathic as her mother. And the problem with Loxana, besides the fact that I'm looking at her name now, and you
it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And when you hear it in the episode, you think it's easier to say than when you see it on the page and you try to pronounce it. There's no apostrophe. Yes. There needs to be an apostrophe after the L.
I would spell it Luxana. Luxana.
Yeah,
it's Lwa.
Xana.
Xa. Yeah.
It's like banana. No.
Confusing me quite a bit.
So it's the introduction of this woman, who is played by Gene Roddenberry's wife, Majel Barrett, and
I think Majel Barrett does a good job, but the character,
she's okay.
The character is extremely flawed.
Yeah, for sure.
She's basically the cliche mother-in-law.
Yeah, and it's just poor writing in general.
Yep.
But she does the best she can with it, I think. She did really great as an actress in this. I just think the writing was just terrible. All she had to go with.
Yeah, and it's all she has. She's basically she's very pompous. She thinks of herself very highly.
She's always growing.
Yeah, she's always growing.
I'm growing beyond all of you. That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. In reference to humans, who we'll get into in this in a bit, but she's very pompous. She has this long title that I'm not going to look up, but it's something like she's the holder of the rings of Beta Zed or something like that.
Right. Heir to the
throne. So, and I think Deanna in a later episode says that means nothing, and it's basically like the King of England at this point in our history. All right, so let's start by running through the plot here. So the cold open, I wrote down, Riker is just about to beat off to a hologram.
Seriously, yeah. You come into his harp session with some late holographic lady. He's just playing harp, and he's just kind of sitting back enjoying it.
He is lounging with a huge grin on his face. And he's watching these hologram harp ladies for no particular reason. And at that point, I think it's Yar calls him into the holodeck.
Yeah.
And so he goes in there, and they're approaching this planet called Haven. And Haven, I suppose, is supposed to be a magical, like, pleasant planet.
It's like Justice, the planet there, like that kind of thing, where it's like peaceful. They don't use technology, they don't have violence. It's just perfect kind of utopia,
right? And it has sort of a legendary thing about if you're sick you'll be healed, or I don't know if they say if you're just sick it'll be healed, but they say something along the lines of like your wishes will come true on Haven,
right?
And
which can mean many things.
Right, exactly. And it's also weird that they're going on and on about this planet, and we never go to the planet in this episode.
It's odd. That's the title of the episode.
And yeah,
It's featured like as like an offhanded like remark almost. Like there's no reason this should be the title of the episode, except for someone wasn't creative enough to think of what to actually call this monstrosity.
Right, but they don't even need to go to the planet at all. Could have brought the other people to them. Just for this, you know, this ceremony that's going to happen on the Enterprise. They never go to the planet. And the later thing that's supposedly, I guess, the other reason for having Haven is that this ship shows up. But it's like... Also never goes to the planet. And it doesn't matter whatsoever. All right. So we won't skip ahead to that. But
yeah.
Riker heads to the holodeck where Yar is getting beamed aboard. It's like a Betazoid treasure box, I guess.
Oh, it's the creepiest thing ever. creepiest messaging system ever.
So you want to describe this little box?
It is a painted silver face basically melded into a box that jewels pop out of at the bottom.
Yes, and it gives a very over-the-top performance of, like, it's basically a singing telegram in box form.
creepy thing, yeah.
And then a bunch of jewels just pop out and someone has to explain what they are. So they do this, Riker and Yar are in there, and then Troi enters the transporter room for no reason whatsoever, and she walks in there, and she explains that very dramatically their wedding gift, and Riker goes, "Whose wedding?" And she goes, "My wedding."
My wedding.
And I think that's when the credits start to roll.
Yeah, credits, right.
So I guess one fact... One fact that it's that's kind of interesting about this episode is that it's the 11th episode to air, but it was actually produced 5th.
And it really shows.
It does.
Really, really shows.
Yeah, so this is a very early episode in terms of when they actually produce these things, and they aired them out of order. So it actually, because it feels like it's been a very long time where we've had to deal with Riker and Troi's relationship. I know you haven't been watching all the episodes, but it's been a good solid probably 8 or 9 episodes where they haven't mentioned it, and they interact with each other normally outside of things. So it's very strange that Riker cares at this point about Troi.
But in terms of filming it, it seems like this is like the main thing they were going to be caring about, because if you like look at they had the pilot where it was a big deal, and then they had like, you know, four episodes later, it was another big deal. Like,
right.
Riker's going off sulking because of their relationship again.
No, it's true. You'd think that this would be the point. We've seen Q more frequently than we've seen this supposed, yeah, like, important relationship between people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, if you didn't know this, Riker and Troy in the pilots were involved. They call each other Imzadi or something like that, which is a Betazoid term that means beloved, basically. Mm-hmm. So they had some deep relationship. And
she calls him Bill also. I don't, yeah, think anybody else calls him Bill.
which is
so weird.
It also ties into the how early in the episodes. There's another episode early in the season where they call him Bill. And
so weird.
They gave up on it about four or five episodes in, I think, and they started realizing that his name should be Will instead of Bill, right, because Bill's a little bit ridiculous.
Bill sounds stupid, yeah.
In the future, Bill sounds a little stupid. Yes.
Yeah, so exactly.
Sorry to all the Bills out there who listen to this, but your name's not going to survive the 23rd century.
Don't think so, yep.
So Troy basically explains to the crew and Picard. She comes into the writer room. She calls him Bill. She calls Riker Bill. And she explains that she is in an arranged marriage, as is the typical Beta Z custom. And she's engaged to someone named Wyatt Miller, who is a human that somehow the Troys used to know the family of the Millers, and they've come to this arranged marriage situation. So let's break down this arranged marriage situation, because it makes very little sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
The Millers and the Troys don't like each other.
Uh-huh.
Right. But they've pledged...
They haven't seen each other in years.
They haven't seen each other, but they've pledged their both equally successful children together.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's not like anyone is gaining any sort of benefit from this marriage.
Like, yeah, there's like, as you said before, they choose the heir to whatever, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
As they point out in later things, like, who cares?
They're both doctors.
Yeah.
He's a... she's a psychiatrist, and he is just a medical doctor. And... They basically don't like each other whatsoever.
No,
but they're still,
no chemistry whatsoever.
They're still sticking to this arranged marriage thing. And the other part of the episode that I thought was strange was just how willingly Troy goes along with it.
Yeah, like, oh, there's nothing I can do. This is like, you know, what, 24th century, and we can't get past arranged marriage things,
right,
like this.
And the
very, very strange.
And the Betazoids have basically seemed to be advanced. You know, they seem more advanced than humans at a certain point,
yeah,
because they're telepathic.
But they still want arranged marriages.
They still want arranged marriages. And I don't know if I'm jumping ahead. Well, all right, I'll keep going. Then I'll bring up my point. But the Millers come on board first, and we learn that the mother and father are kind of stick in the mud, I guess. And
waspy, I would say.
Yes, that's a good way to describe them. They are waspy. And Wyatt is a huge pussy, which is what we learned.
Oh, I freaked out when Wyatt was introduced, because I just finished watching Prison Break,
mm-hmm,
and this actor is featured prominently throughout the entire series.
Oh, really?
And it is a very, very different character, obviously, coming from this character to Prison Break. And I had to pause the show after my wife said, "You know who that is, right?" And I'm like, "No." She's like, "She showed me this Prison Break guy." I'm like, I had to turn the show off and walk away because I couldn't focus on anything else except how crazy it is that this guy's playing this role.
I wonder what he's done in between. Hopefully he's only done those two things.
And quite a bit. Yeah, those are the only things he's done. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. No, I don't know, but it just blew my mind for a minute there.
I just imagine in the Prison Break writer's room, they're like, "Get me that guy who played Wyatt Miller on Star Trek The Next
Robert Nepper. Who? Robert Nepper, the guy from that episode of TNG in season one.
That episode had a real impact on me, and I need him.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, at least it's good that he's still working. He's
that's great. He's a great actor, actually.
Yeah, this
role aside, he's an actually excellent actor, I think.
Yeah, I'll blame it on the script, I think.
For
so,
sure.
So Wyatt and his family come over. Wyatt's like a quivering little pussy. He's basically like very nervous around everything that's going on. He meets Troy.
Yep.
And he says a pleasant hello or whatever, and he leaves. And then Troy explains to Picard that she is not what he expected. They've never met.
Yeah.
So Wyatt is... disappointed, I guess, would be the way to describe it in meeting Troy.
Yes.
So they...
Yeah. Not he was... He's... Well, we get to that later, but yeah, he had visions of other things.
Yes,
that,
which is...
Which he was carrying around with him for some reason, like, as he expected it to be her when he got off the transporter, and that's why he was so shocked. Which actually, knowing that in context and going back and looking at that scene, it actually was well acted, knowing the actual undertones of it. But when you first see it, he seems like overacting fidgety.
Yes.
But then you realize that there's actually more to it, but you wouldn't know that at the time.
I suppose that's true. I didn't think about that. I guess he is actually I haven't watched this episode in forever. It's so bad that I just never watch it. I guess that does make sense that that's why he would be nervous.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for bringing that up.
In Robert Nepper's defense, I'm always going to defend him, apparently. That's fine with me.
So, at this point, the Millers leave, and Luoxana and Mr. Hom. I think that's how you say his name.
Oh, Mr. Hom. Mr. Hom. Yes, I love Mr. Hom.
So, Luoxana is Deanna's mother, as we mentioned. She's a full Beta Zed. She comes over, and she has this sort of towering giant whose name is Mr. Hom. He's almost virtually mute. He says one line in this episode. It's the only time he's ever spoken.
I think in the entire series, he does pop up again, and I think this is the only time he actually speaks.
He does. Yeah, this is his only speaking line. I would have preferred he never said anything at all, but he tags along. He's sort of her valet, I guess is what she calls him. He carries bags and basically does stuff like that.
Luoxana emasculates Picard immediately. As soon as she gets off the transporter, he's like, oh, can you carry my bags?
Yep.
Knowing that he can't. She asks him to carry his bags, and he's like, oh, okay, I guess I can do that for you, of course. And being the gentleman host, and it's just a ploy to emasculate him immediately.
Immediately. And he's very, his interaction with Luoxana changes over the course of the series. He gets a little bit more impatient with her. He's very patient with her for how early in the show this is. But I have a couple thoughts about the Betazoids. Basically,
that doesn't
have internal logic to it. So
let's dig into it.
When they beam over, Luoxana communicates with Deanna telepathically. So she doesn't talk to her. You just hear voiceover in the episode of those two communicating. And Deanna, having lived amongst humans in the Federation, is more insistent on actually vocalizing things.
Because it makes everyone uncomfortable.
Right. Because, everyone else, you're basically having a private conversation. And
right.
So, why do the Betas that this is probably too? I mean, this is obviously just a too like advanced digging into it too far. But why do the Betazoids even have a vocal communication system?
Right. Why would they need to use anything else? That's a good point.
Right.
Unless they just have to interact with lower life forms like us.
Right. But
occasionally,
if you were really thinking it out, you'd be like, oh, maybe they can't talk very well. You know, like that would be their thing. Yeah. Like they.
But they still. Yeah, they can communicate just fine without thoughts.
Yeah, they just choose whether or not to. So I thought that was weird that I didn't understand why they actually have vocal communication when they probably would never need it.
And no, probably not.
The other thing that really struck me was what was something that happened in the last episode? I sort of reeled. Oh, the I watched Hide and Q, which isn't this episode, it's the previous episode, and it struck me that the Q are not omniscient. They basically don't know everything.
Yeah, that's weird.
Which struck me. I never really realized that. I thought that they were all knowing, but they really only know what they would know from experiencing things. Like they learned about Shakespeare in that episode, and they sort of learn about things like that. So the Q are omnipotent, but they're not omniscient. So they don't know everything, but they have godlike powers. And in this episode, we learn something that I was surprised to think about, is that the Betazoids are basically perfectly honest.
Yeah, she says that she's bothered by the humans and all their duplicity, basically, of saying one thing and thinking another all the time.
Right.
And she says everyone should be honest like me because I'm so great.
Because she is the humanity that we all aspire towards.
I guess so.
But she's,
oh, God help us.
Yeah, she's. I just thought that was weird. And if that's the case, Deanna Troi does a very good job of fitting in with humans because she's mastered the art of. Lying or sort of not being totally honest with people.
She's actually like a true empath in a lot of ways. Like,
right.
Whereas Luoxana is like super powered and can read everyone's thoughts, but doesn't actually feel any of them.
Yep.
Deanna actually seems to feel everyone's thoughts. Actually.
Yeah.
Like,
she
doesn't actually just hear them. She feels them.
Right. She is actually more empathic. I think they talk about, she just does. She views emotions more as sort of vague feelings where her mother is much more able to identify what people are thinking and is much more intimidating to be around. And the only plot hole here, I'm going to jump ahead to the end, is that Loxana seems ignorant to who Riker is.
Yeah, he should be picking up all kinds of stuff from this.
Right, she should know. She's like, you were the guy that was banging my daughter a couple years ago. Yeah. Like, I've read your thoughts. And at the end of the episode, she acts as if it's the first time meeting him. And Troy tells her to like back off, basically.
Uh huh. Yeah, that's a little weird.
And
it's when it's convenient for the writers, they forget that she can read everyone's thoughts.
Yeah, she can do it. But it's. I mean, it's just a nice little, it's a little more of a joke is that Riker isn't actually obsessed with getting a captaincy. That's not why he ended the relationship. He actually just met his future mother-in-law and was like, you know what?
Yeah, no thanks.
This is not for me. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm going to go pretty much on my own way. So back into it. So we had that nice little scene with Picard brings the...
Struggling to carry things. Yeah,
struggling to carry all that baggage.
And then Deanna finally has to yell at her and... then Deanna gets yelled at by Loxana for embarrassing the captain.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
It's like, this has all been set up by you. You're manipulating everyone.
Yeah, they're for being telepathic, they certainly do step all over each other. They should instantly know what they're doing. So, right. Yeah, so they have this little awkward scene. Picard has this nice little comedy bit of leaving the room that we discussed.
Oh, God.
And then...
so awkward.
What happens after this? So then they talk to the... the Enterprise goes down and talks to the... Well, I guess to clarify this, the whole reason that these people are here to have this wedding on the Enterprise, where they're going to marry Wyatt and Deanna. And Deanna is going along with it whole hog. The only person who seems really upset, even Picard, she's basically telling him that she's going to quit. And he's like, well, that's too bad.
That's unfortunate.
That's unfortunate, but customs are what they are and Prime Directive being what it is.
Yeah, he's all about it.
I'll just let you go. So who's the only person upset by this on the entire ship?
Riker is in his sulky little sad sunset holodeck.
Riker is...
not yet, but he is in full sulky mode for every single scene from here on out.
This entire episode, every time Riker's not on screen, I just imagine him sort of blogging on his live journal about
how
badly he feels about this whole thing. Yeah, but there are scenes of him, he's on the holodeck and he's sitting with his knee in his hands and just sort of like moping around.
Looking at a sad sunset that he created. He actually had to go to the computer and say, make me a sad sunset in a desert that I can sit in, please.
Computer, run breakup program Omega Alpha.
Play
one.
Sad music, please.
Oh, God. So Riker is the only person who's... he has a lot of dramatic room exits in this episode. He does it once in the ready room.
Yep, in Picard's office.
Yep, and then once in the conference room, when Picard is talking to him and the meeting is not over, he just turns around and leaves.
Yep.
So he's and Picard seems oddly oblivious to it.
Yeah, doesn't seem to notice that he's got a child on his hands.
He's got something going. So the Troys and all them are over, and the crew talks to the Haven ambassador lady, who might be the worst actress that the show has
Swedish
seen.
Swedish accent? I don't remember. It was a weird accent. I think it was Swedish accent for some reason.
Was she trying to do the accent? Maybe. Or was that her native?
Possibly it was just the actresses Swedish, because they were just blondes and I don't know. It was weird.
It was terrible. It was clearly a scene where she's not acting against anyone. They're just like, just say the lines into the camera. Because she has no cadence to anything she's saying. She's just like, Captain, we must be going get them. And it's like, all right, this is appalling acting being done in front of me that I'm forced to watch. But it's the only glimpse of Haven that we actually get.
Yeah, it's only that shot. That's all we get. That's all there is to Haven.
Just a little room.
One person and that little room, yep.
So, at this point, we have a billion different plot strands going at this episode at this point. There's a lot of introduction stuff happening.
Yes.
And so Deanna heads over to, she's going to go talk to Wyatt, because if you're marrying this guy, you might as well get to know him.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes into his apartment and... they have a little conversation, and then it turns out that Wyatt has been drawing what my wife called my wife made a pretty good joke about it, just saying apparently Wyatt loves Christy Turlington, because he's been drawing just this blonde woman endlessly.
Yes.
He has numerous just charcoal sketches of some blonde woman, and he tells Deanna that this is a woman who is in his dreams. And Deanna is not her, so he's a little upset, yeah. But he's going to try his best.
But why does he have the pictures on display?
That
I can understand. She's like, your thoughts are drawn to this. This thing on display right over here that you set up. Well, like, why isn't he knows it's not her. Why doesn't he just keep that to himself then?
I assume.
Instead of, like, displaying it for her.
I assume it was consistent writing and that he was just about to sit down and beat off to those pictures, just like Riker was
That's
earlier.
That's exactly right. That's what they have in common.
He was definitely buckling his pants as Troy entered in the room. But it is weird that he just displays these pictures that he's drawn. And No one seems upset that this...
There's no need. You have a telepath person in the scene. You don't need to have them on display. You can have them hidden and still have his thoughts on them.
Right.
And she can still find them.
Right. Like, and she should bring up the fact that you
doesn't need to display them for some reason, but because they actually cut away to that shot earlier to remind us that this is a different person.
Oh,
when we first get introduced to her, spoilers.
That's right.
She gets introduced to the person that he's been dreaming of.
But he also, I think there's a couple scenes where he's carrying the pictures around in like a little portfolio with him. So he like carries carries the pictures around when he's not.
Yeah. Well, when he came on the holodeck, he actually had him out clutching. He was clutching him to his chest and he's like rubbing it. Actually, I was like, I had to rewind it because that was in the part where I was still getting over the prison break thing. He's like, why is he like rubbing those drawings while he's like standing there? It's weird. But I guess he's obsessed with the drawings.
He's obsessed. So he's had this woman has been in his mind since he could ever remember, and he thought it was going to be Deanna. It is obviously not, because this woman is blonde, just to make the difference totally.
Because that's the only way they could differentiate. They had to make sure it was a blonde, not a brunette, so that there would be any confusion whatsoever.
And so Troy is not particularly perturbed by this. And then does she start making out with him there in the room?
I don't think yet.
Oh, that's the holodeck, right? Their first kiss?
The holodeck for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll get to that in a bit. I have to go off on their little kissing thing. So mm-hmm. At this point, the plot lurches forward and the mm-hmm. Torellians appear. So the Torellians are a spaceship that the planet Haven is called up to the Enterprise and saying there's a hostile ship approaching. We need you to intercept it. So the Enterprise goes over. And it's basically one of those, what are those little balls that you touch and like the electricity shoots out from it and touches your hand?
Oh, yeah, exactly that. That's what it is. It's driven by that for sure.
So
that's what's powering the whole thing.
It's basically a... it's a gray triangle that surrounds one of those little balls, that a plasma uh-huh. ball or whatever it's touched, and that is flying towards the planet. And the Enterprise identifies it as a Torellian vessel. And I had never heard of the Torellians before.
No, I think that might be... It's brand new to this, obviously. I think it is this and only this,
yes,
possibly.
This is the only time I think they've ever been mentioned. And so they have a meeting in the meeting room, the little conference room, where all the senior officers gather. And I thought this scene was hilarious because it is so poorly written that it is 100% exposition, where Picard is walking around the room going, what are these Torellians? And apparently everyone knows goddamn thing about the Torellians that they're ever.
We can all know this history. We can all expound it because it's taught in the Academy since you've been gone from the Academy. It's normal curriculum now to talk about the Torellians,
Torellians
for some reason.
They know exactly how they went extinct, when it happened. They were plague carriers. They know all this information. And every senior officer, even Yar, who's an idiot and has shown to be an idiot through
the
entire season.
Oh my gosh, such an idiot in this.
She knows a fact about them. And then it gets to the point where the writer was just like, fuck it. And then Picard starts mentioning facts as well. So he obviously knows about the Torellians.
Now he remembers all of a sudden. Yeah,
like,
it's true.
Oh, now I remember.
Oh yeah, those guys. God, so horrible.
So
and then Riker babies out once again,
yes,
as you mentioned before. He storms out.
That's where Riker storms out because Picard mentions that they have to have this wedding, and Riker mm-hmm. Picard is just that oblivious friend who keeps rubbing salt in the wounds.
And even more so than Injustice, they have the moral conflict just spelled out. Like they're like, oh, we have to either protect this race or protect this race, mm-hmm. and that's my moral conflict I have to deal with now. Like he actually just like spells it out completely that this is what I have to decide now. That's the choice.
They're getting super obvious. It was also the same way in Hide and Q. Hide and Q is a blatantly terrible example of just it's like a morality play where things. The moral choice doesn't even make sense. It's just someone telling you that this is the morally correct choice. At least here, it's kind of makes sense. And in Hide and Q, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, he has a choice here at least that he has to ponder. But actually, in the end, it doesn't even matter because it gets solved by without him actually making any kind of choice about it.
Yeah.
So it does. It's total non-plot.
No, it really fits totally into the first season of the show where the plot just resolves itself without anyone doing anything to fix anything.
Yep. Pretty much.
All right. So let's see. The Torellians, they had their little conference. And this led to what is perhaps the greatest scene in Star Trek history, the dinner party, or the pre-wedding party, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. The most technical reason it's interesting is because it was obviously shot piecemeal, because the camera only shows a couple people at a time. You never get a wide shot of everyone sitting there. Shot,
yep, for sure.
And it looks like the room that they're shooting in is about 5 feet wide by 7 feet long or something like that. It is incredibly tiny, and it looks like a corporate office cake party that I would throw at my work.
Pretty much.
There's no decoration. There's a couple people showing up, and Data is walking around the edge of the
leering
hall.
Like crazy and smirking like a madman.
Why was he smirking so much?
He was smirking because they don't even mention it at this. Like, he's just standing around, like, looking like an idiot and grinning like an idiot. But they mention later on that he's intrigued by all of the different, like, he's intrigued by the
bickering.
The Pegasoid and, all the bickering,
He loves the bickering. And Picard actually tells him to stop hovering around like a buzzard and to sit.
Yeah, you're hovering like a buzzard. You're circling like a buzzard. Data. And he walks off.
So this scene is basically to highlight... Well, it sets a couple things in motion. It gives Wyatt the idea that he can cure the Torellians.
Mm-hmm.
He discusses that with Dr. Crusher, and they say we can beam over some supplies to cure them because the Torellians are sick. They basically had a civil war where they used biological weapons on each other.
Right.
Yep.
Yes. And now they're all infected. Every single planet they touch seems to die off.
Yep.
And that's the big impulse for Haven not wanting them to come to their planet.
Yes, exactly. We should clarify that. So they're basically walking biological weapons, and anyone who comes in contact with them dies. And so Wyatt comes up with the idea to beam over a vaccine. I guess he just can cure this, and no race has ever wanted to cure the Torellians before, or they've never asked for help.
Well, they also haven't been seen in like 8 years.
Oh, that's right. Because
someone that says that
these are the last 8 Torellians. Mm-hmm. I think they say that in the episode. So they thought the race was extinct, but they're not. There's just one ship left, I guess.
Yeah.
So the other thing besides Wyatt setting this plan into motion is the bickering between the Millers and Lwaxana.
Oh God.
So
this is such a weird scene.
The typical newlywed argument. The parents are bickering about what kind of ceremony they want to have, and it's not a ceremony. We're not arguing about like a, Judaic wedding versus a Protestant Baptist or something. We are instead arguing about Beta Zed versus human. I like that they just
which is weird. Yeah, the homogeny of
human.
Like it's, all humans are boiled down to one type of wedding now.
So we can assume that one sort of religious ceremony has won out, basically, in the 24th century, and that is...
Yeah, apparently, it might just be the waspy people think that everyone does what they do kind of thing. That was my other thought I had after that. It's like, oh, maybe they're just kind of racist people that don't really think anyone else's traditions matter besides theirs.
No, it's true. It's the show has done an excellent job of... The show is kind of racist, if you think of it in terms human interests. Humans are always seen as the superior creature.
But among humans, there's no diversity whatsoever.
No, we're
like all human culture is human culture.
Right, we do.
There's no differences.
No,
at all.
Everyone gets along perfectly, and everyone thinks exactly the same thing. So they have a little bickering because this becomes a sort of running joke. The Betazoid marriage ceremony is done in the nude. Ha 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 ha.
Oh, a cut to Yar going, oh God, that was a terrible read of the line going, the bride and groom are naked? Like it was a Wesley Crusher reading of the line, actually.
He should have just stuck his head in. Yeah, he should have just stuck his head in the door and been like, they're naked? So
they're naked?
Yeah, 1987, I assume this episode came in. So being naked is still a huge even in the future where, humans have seen everything. They've seen crazy shit.
Yeah,
and a naked wedding ceremony is too much for people to bear, apparently.
I don't like much about this episode, but the one thing that saves it for me in this scene especially, is Ham getting drunk in the background. He is getting like they kind of make it offhand a comment, but then every single time the camera's on him, he's like downing another drink. And it's just this kind of thing that comes up later at the end, which actually does pay off in that they're like, oh, he enjoyed your beverages or whatever. Drunk Hom is what saves it for me. It saves the episode.
And I like how Data is the sort of party host who's like keeping his eye on people. And he tells Mr. Hom that he the amount he has imbibed, do you have human in your lineage? And I hadn't seen the episode in a while. And when he said that, I was like, are they going to say something somewhat controversial here? And they pushed out by saying human. I thought they were going to be like, do you hail from like Ireland
that's
or something?
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they didn't. It's human. Oh, yeah, that's interesting that it stands for any type of racism you want to put in there then. That's kind of interesting.
Because they later introduce, this is all jumping out of order, but it's like they introduce Romulan ale, which is supposed to be so potent that it's illegal in the Federation, which is basically kind of like a parody of the Cuban embargo, I think.
Oh, sure. Okay.
They're not supposed to have, you know, Romulan goods. But Romulan ale is supposed to be extremely powerful. So you would think that the Romulans would be the drinkers at that point, if they're the ones thrown down like that.
But still, Data thinks humans are the big drinkers in the galaxy.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah,
apparently. But Hom really, in his defense, Hom really pours him down, though.
No, he does. He gets a 500 milliliter beaker and just fills it up.
Plastic cup, yeah.
And throws it down. And then pretends to stare at the ceiling at something until Data gets weirded out and leaves.
Yep.
Okay, so I wrote in my notes, this dining scene is a mess, and I suppose
it really is. There's so many things that, like, it's there's so much that are trying to make funny and just introduce weird things.
Yep.
They do the marriage ceremony. They have Luxwana has a vine pet on her right now,
which makes no
for some reason.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. Doesn't pay off at all. Like, there's no reason to have that except for you to want to have something else funny in the scene.
She never mentioned it before. It's just something weird that apparently the plants on Betazoid. Or Beta Z, I guess. If I don't know what the plant's called, but they are sentient, I guess. Stupid. Stupid.
Yeah, pretty dumb. And Riker storms off again at the end of the before they can really get to Riker storms off before they even get to the part about the whole wedding ceremony is everyone is naked,
The
Betazoid tradition.
Yep, he leaves. He storms out again. He's been storming out every scene he's been in. And this is the scene where they cut to the holodeck.
Yep, the sad holodeck that he created.
So, Deanna Troi enters the holodeck, and Riker is sitting like a 12-year-old boy who had just been, like his dog had been run over or something. He has one knee up to his chin and is sort of hugging his leg as he's sitting on a rock. And he's staring at, as you said, a sad sunset. And I don't think they mentioned where he was, right?
No, they didn't say.
It's just
as far as I could tell.
It's just like a stupid script thing. It's like I'm not a good writer by any means, but it's like, wouldn't you just have him say like, this is like a moon of Betazed or something
someplace
where we hung out
to him or something? Yeah, like some reason that he would go to this spot instead of like I suggested, he actually told the thing to make me a sad sunset and desert to sit in, please.
Right. Just like, remember that time me and you sat on the seventh moon of Rigel 3 or something. Like, this
It would take one line of dialogue, and it would actually add a lot to the scene if they just did that.
Instead,
it would really ground it, actually.
Instead, she just walks in, and they have I'm trying to remember what they do here. They just have a little talk.
Yeah, he's made. I wrote down Habit of the Beast is one of the things he was like. Like, how they're like, you know, they're of two minds about things, and he can't separate plutonic love from romantic love or something like that.
Yes, yeah. Troi mentions that. She says the humans are bad. It's, I guess Betazoid is kind of like a little justice planet, is what it seems to imply. They're very free with, because they obviously know.
Yeah, that's true.
They obviously know.
Evolved, past everything else.
Right, and they immediately know if someone wants to have sex with them. Basically, so there's no sort of like hidden dances that they have to go through. So I'd imagine,
well, on Justice, they would just assume everyone wants to have sex constantly.
Yeah,
they would just assume there.
Betazed is just a little bit more reserved, where they actually will just like reject you or not.
Right.
Although it's kind of an interesting race of the ideas. If you see someone, right, and you're both telepathic, and you think you want to have sex with them, and they think they don't want to have sex with you, which thought gets to the other person first so that you don't embarrass yourself, basically.
Right, exactly. How fast do thoughts travel?
If you really think it very hard,
a
is
lot
it going
of embarrassment.
Go there faster. So Wyatt enters kind of rudely, I thought.
But no, the way they introduced him, like with Deanna, she got in there, they had the door open, everything like that, there was sound. Like, the way they introduced Wyatt, he was there the whole time. Like, he's like, oh, you guys are here too. How about that?
Yeah.
Hey guys, how's it going? He's impressed by the holodeck. Like,
there was no door chime. Seriously. He just kind of like, oh, well, I've been hiding behind this
rock. Oh, you guys
rock.
Are here. Yeah.
So he's gaining confidence by the moment because he basically shits all over Riker in his heart.
He's smug. He's smug as hell here.
And he does that somewhat embarrassing thing where he's been talking to Deanna and Deanna told him something personal about Riker and he just brings it up. He's like,
cuts him down. He's like, breaking balls is what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. You want to be a captain, huh? And Riker shoots a look at Troy. Is just like, you betrayed me.
Yes.
How dare you tell him about my dreams.
He's scowling during this whole thing. And like White even gets him one final dig. He's like, Bill is leaving. He's like, running all this must be very difficult or very hard.
Yep.
Good luck. Like
he says, I think he says, good luck with your ambitions, I think is something.
Yeah,
he says.
Exactly. Oh my God. What a, what a jerk.
So, Bill Riker leaves angrily and Troy and Wyatt hang around and just start making out, I guess is the only thing that I remember.
Habit of the beasts.
Yep. That's the only thing I remember from that scene.
Also, they say that they've made a compromise as far as the wedding ceremony, and only his father and her mother and the couple and Mr. Ham possibly will go naked.
Hopefully.
I don't remember.
Hopefully, we can only hope. Yeah, so they're basically not making any of the guests go naked at the wedding.
Yeah.
The marriage party is, and Lwaxana, basically.
Yeah.
And is that where they go back to? Sorry, just
flipping. They go back to the Tyrellians.
Oh, they go back to the Tyrellians. That's right. So they lock a tractor beam.
Oh, this is where they introduce the Tyrellians. Oh, yes. This is fantastic.
Oh, that's right. We haven't discussed that.
They did tractor beam. Yeah, they do the tractor beam. And then finally they cue the 80s music video scene.
Oh, that's right. Monitor. It's on page two. So the Enterprise is like, well, we can't let this plague ship get to Haven. So they lock a tractor beam on it, which I wrote down here, they use the tractor beam more times in the first 10 episodes, I think, than they use during the rest of the series. They use this thing every chance they get.
I was like screaming that they need to use the tractor beam right now, like the entire time, thinking they wouldn't do that, but they finally pulled through for me.
The tractor beam is another thing of sort of the power of it. It just varies. Basically, it's like the strength of Superman or the strength of the Hulk in a comic book. It's like whatever you need.
Depends on what you need. Yeah, exactly.
Because in one of my favorite episodes, Cause and Effect, the tractor beam is not enough. If you remember that episode.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, I do remember that episode.
So it's powerful enough to sort of stop starships from moving. But
unless it's having a bad day.
Yeah, unless it's coming at you, then you can't do anything.
If it's in a bad mood, then it doesn't work right.
So the Tyrellians at this point reveal themselves. And they look like totally normal human beings. God,
purple set with like crazy... And then, but very 80s music video look to them, like open shirts on the dude with like no sleeves, but their sleeves are there. Yeah. And the girl is like seriously wearing like Whitesnake video stuff.
She's got a sort of half shirt, probably some underboob going on in the in the makeup room. But a pretty attractive woman that got to play this role, which I was kind of, she was like modernly attractive, if that makes sense, for how old the show is.
They put her out front, like at the commercial break or whatever. They put her out front, like as the first shot you see. But then the dude just shoves her out of the way immediately. And then it's like, no, I'm in charge, actually. Like
I wrote that down.
She was in charge. No.
I wrote down, it was the guy looking at the wrong view screen to start off. Like, because she's just standing there and doesn't say anything.
Yes.
And then he comes over and is just like, oh, excuse me, hun. Like,
sorry, do you have to move away now?
I'm actually the captain.
You're in my room. Yep. It's so weird.
So she's wildly attractive, and he is bald and not attractive. So he is obviously the captain. And Deanna immediately recognizes the blonde because she is blonde and therefore must be the woman that Wyatt has been drawing.
Yeah, well, it does look, the one drawing, it does kind of look like her.
Okay, I'll grant you that.
The center drawing with the crazy 80s hair.
I'm glad he nailed one of his 10,000 drawings. Yeah. He actually got it. Yeah. He got it to look right.
Pretty good that time.
And so they explain, do they explain who they are or does Deanna just know at this point?
I think I don't remember if Wyatt shows up like 2 seconds later after they say
he does.
They cut to commercial and they come back and then like Wyatt shows up pretty much after that.
Oh yes, Wyatt just comes in. They kind of page him and he comes in. He's carrying his pictures, and he notices the woman and he recognizes her. Ariana, I guess her name is. Yeah, Ariana, according to Wikipedia. So this is the woman of his dreams, and she has been dreaming about him as well. which is
very strange. Very strange occurrences. Yeah.
Okay. So
which Luxuana, I guess, apparently is explaining this to us later on, that all life is bound together, as that's the way that they can communicate with each other through dreams.
Right.
Apparently.
This,
which is a very supernatural explanation for something in this series.
It is, and it's also, it was delivered so half-assed that I thought she was lying. I thought she was just humoring him to get him to marry Deanna, basically.
Yeah, it could be.
So
I don't know. It's very strange.
I mean, this is like the center point of this story, that this guy Wyatt has come on. He's been dreaming about this woman, and there she is on the ship, and she's been dreaming about him. They explain this plot so poorly that they basically just say, this is just the way it is, so just accept that this has happened and this is the way that we're going to continue this story. It makes absolutely no sense that this is how the plot's going to resolve itself.
Yeah, no, it's very Deus Ex something another. I don't know what it would be, not Machina necessarily, but it's something.
No, it's sort of the random hand of God, I guess, is the way you could describe
it.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's just like, oh, here's somehow a totally random thing that happened.
Yeah.
And
it's very, very weird.
He's happy with it. Troy is whatever with it. So I'm just going to hustle through because not much happens here in the last bit of thing. So Wyatt goes to his parents and explains that he's going to go over to the ship after stealing. Uh-huh. He steals a vaccine from sickbay. He goes and says goodbye to Deanna. He kisses her one last time, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. He says to his parents, take care of each other. I'm going to leave. And then he, even though he's done this, no one seems to care. He goes in to the transporter room, and the transporter chief is like, oh, I'll beam you over. And Wyatt,
nameless deep voice transporter chief.
Yes, yeah. That guy had such a deep voice, and he had such a terrible haircut that I couldn't get past. But that guy went into that show shooting thinking, I'm going to leave my mark on this show. Because right. He got the most ridiculous haircut. He talks in the lamest voice.
One line.
And the only other thing that happens is he continues to stare forward as Wyatt circles behind him and shoots him in the neck with a hypospray. And the guy gives the most overly dramatic reaction to being knocked out by a hypospray. Like he looks basically, eyes the camera, and just goes like,
go down.
And just falls down. And so Wyatt apparently had to drug him to get him onto the ship. Wyatt beams over to the alien vessel. And he looks at the pictures on the wall. And there are pictures of...
Oh, yeah.
I think there are pictures of Bon Jovi all over the places.
through his various stages, yeah.
Through the various albums. They're not actually Bon Jovi. They are pictures of Wyatt because she has been drawing Wyatt. And apparently her artwork is so good that they hang it in the halls of the ship.
Well, he's the chosen one is what he's finding out here. He's the most important person to the planet.
They view him apparently as the chosen one?
Yeah, apparently that's the case. I think that they were more responsive to her having dreams about this guy than they were about Wyatt having dreams about some random woman, whereas she's having dreams about this random guy is going to save their people kind of thing. So they like view him as their savior.
I didn't even notice. Did she mention that he was going to save the planet in her dreams?
Like, well, he's going to, yeah, I think that like the guy mentions that she saw that you would save us or something like that.
Oh,
she said
okay.
That you would do it. You would become aboard and you would save us or something.
Yeah. Just hammer that point in, yeah. I guess. Okay. Right. So he beams over there. He sees pictures. He's left. I wrote down, who cares? Troy is happy. And Luxuana is surprisingly happy after having been obsessed.
Well, she didn't care. Yeah, she didn't want any of this. She just liked to get people to goat. And,
yeah, remarkably flippant character. Seems to be all about the wedding, and then it's just like, well, whatever. And
whatever,
as she has her conversation, it's just like, well, you know, Wyatt, whatever. Thoughts make the universe happen. And I guess it's totally plausible that you and some random person would have the same exact dream about each other and then meet here.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Anything can happen. Yeah, like, seriously, that's such a weird choice.
Yeah, and then as you said, Picard ends the episode. Everyone leaves. Troy, Luxuana leaves, and Picard just says, "He's not amused."
She makes a joke like, "Oh, you shouldn't have such dirty thoughts like my previous servant had."
Yes, the Luxuana.
You're even worse.
The Luxuana leaving is basically we brought up the points of she's sort of playing Picard into making other people think that he likes her. And she hits on Riker, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but
and then she leaves, and that's it. And then the the crew just says, "Well, it's time to go off on our next adventure."
Yeah, exactly. Let's get away from here.
And they do my favorite ending of the every episode when the ship sort of curves around into speed when it just flies off screen. They don't do that a lot.
That's a good ending.
I wish they did that more. So that's the end of the episode.
What a winner!
It's a real bad one, and it's let's see, just one of just my plot points here. I wrote at the end: naked obsession. The plot is terrible. Far too much plot jammed in. Riker, Troy, Haven, aliens. Those are like the three plots that didn't work. And why Haven? They never go to the planet.
Why is it called Haven?
Why is it called Haven?
Come up with a better title. I don't know what you would want to call it instead, but Haven is not a good title.
Haven is pretty much garbage. And what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the one thing I did plot-wise appreciate is that this is the first episode that ever showed the modern writing style of having the plots dovetail into each other.
Yeah, they did mention that. I saw that on the wiki. Yeah, this was good. That was a good point.
Oh, really? They bring that up.
Yeah, I think they did mention that in one of the reviews that they quoted on the wiki is that it was one of the first times on the show ever that they did a dovetailing A and B plot.
It comes
to be commonplace on the show eventually, which is it
seems
jammed in though.
It does, but it's a hallmark of strong writing, you know, because it shows that you actually have a reason to be doing your plots when they intersect and it makes sense.
And this has gone through, from what I was reading on the wiki, this has gone through a rewrite where someone wrote it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And then the actual writer credited for the episode rewrote it with the comedy built in.
Yeah.
So I feel like the original script might have actually been better than the actual rewrite because the dovetailing plots would have to have been in there already. So that's a sign of a good writing.
Right.
And
yes.
The comedy was not quite on the mark for the most part,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, for this, a little dated. Yeah, I'm looking at this now. Mm-hmm. I just pulled up on Wikia. So a guy named Lan O'Koon. What the fuck kind of a name is that? Lan O'Koon. Wrote a script that was serious, and it was handed to Tracy Torme for rewrites. Torme later described this situation as no lose, as he felt that O'Koon's script was so bad that anything would be an improvement. Wow.
That's a vote of confidence right
there. Tracy Torme not pulling any punches.
No punches whatsoever.
So he rewrote this episode, and it's just, I do appreciate that, because the past 10 episodes I've watched, a lot of them, probably 80% of them, don't have B stories. Mm-hmm. And the ones that do have absolutely nothing to do with the plot. So it's nice.
This is a much better way to do it. Yeah, this is the way it should be.
It is. It's a much more mature style of writing.
Yeah.
And they eventually do pick into that, or at least
they find their way eventually. They do. They actually get some decent writing and everything.
It takes 50 episodes, so sit down, guys. This is going to maybe come back in half a year when I get up to episode 3, and we'll see what goes on. But let's go through the... So, yeah, what are your final thoughts? What did you think?
This was pretty much the worst episode I've seen, mm-hmm. I think. I wasn't forced to watch Code of Honor, though.
Yep.
As you were previously a couple episodes ago, so I guess that is in my favor there. But I do think this is probably one of the worst episodes.
This is. I've gone through a couple iterations of rating these things, and I've settled on a 5-1 setting. And here, I'll read just as a refresher for everybody. So I basically use the Board Game Geek system of I write a little sentence, and then if whatever sentence closest applies to you, that's the number. So five is a classic episode, one of the best, and I'd always watch it. Four is above average. We'll usually watch it or recommend it as someone who's never seen the show before. Three is average. It's enjoyable, but usually unmemorable. We'll sometimes watch if nothing else is on. Two is a weak. We'll not want to rewatch. And one is bad. One of the worst. One of the clunkers. Never rewatch it if you have to.
Oh my God, I can say a one for this one for sure.
Haven's a one.
But then again, Haven's a one. But then again, there's so many things that it's a love to hate it kind of thing.
Yes.
Well, that's the only reason I would rewatch it, but it is terrible. I would tell anyone who's watching the series for the first time to avoid this episode.
Well, I mean, Justice is my highest rated of the so far. I'm trying to stay away from 0.5s. I gave it a 2.5. It would be a 2, but it's so silly that I kind of enjoyed watching it, so it boosted up a little bit. But yeah, this Haven is
this is a bad one.
Haven is definitely a one. Code of Honor is a Code of Honor might be the worst episode, I think.
It's a clear one.
Yeah, this one's really bad, but Code of Honor is pretty atrocious.
pretty bad.
So let's see here. Yep. I will sum up with, let's see. And I've been avoiding the reading reviews anymore because I like to stay fresh about what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
So I will now read some. Will Wheaton said that it was could have been an absolutely dreadful shotgun wedding episode that is predictable as it is tedious, but Tracy's script, aided by good guest star casting and great acting from everyone involved, made it one of the better episodes in season one. Wow.
That's so weird.
I don't agree with that at all, Will Wheaton.
He wasn't in the episode. That's the only way he could say that. If he was actually even close to this episode, he would be hating it, I'm sure.
Maybe that's true. The script is not very good. The guest star casting is fine. They're written.
It's fine, yeah.
They're written poorly.
But, yeah.
Let's see. James Hunt for website Den of Geek. He was mostly negative, saying that the Troy episodes tend to test the patience of even the most devoted Trek fan. Loxana Troy, I'd agree. Yeah, I don't know if that's what he means. Sure. But
no, he means the Troy Riker episodes with their relationship on the line kind of thing. Those episodes, I do agree with that assessment too.
Yep.
That those kind of seem to be the hardest episodes to get through generally.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do it in the next episode if you want to come back. I do have a question I would like to ask you at some point, but remind me next time. He said,
we're running long here.
He said that Haven marked the first time the series would properly execute the idea that episodes could have an A and B plot which dovetail. Oh, excellent.
Yeah, that's the one I read there. And yeah, that was a good point.
So Keith Candido reviewed the episode in 2011. He described the episode as painful to watch and one that all the worst sci-fi TV cliches are in evidence. He criticized the out-of-date sexist values of a plot in which Troy would be forced to leave the ship to be with Wyatt. Huh.
Yeah.
Which is true.
We mentioned it. Yeah, 24th century, why is any of this happening with the arranged marriage? And secondly, why is she not allowed to keep her career at the end of this?
Right. Why doesn't he? It seems like she has the better position. He can be a doctor on a starship. You know, like, why doesn't she come live on he come live on the Enterprise?
Yeah.
Huh.
For sure. Like, yeah, it's weird. They need doctors on the ship. Like, why can't he come work for them?
Yeah, he seems, it doesn't he make seems, any sense. Seems good at
he's
it.
He's capable.
Yeah. He did praise the appearance of Majel Barrett, describing her as ever radiant. Wow. And with the saving grace of the episode. I will say she had a very nice back when she was wearing the open.
Okay.
For an older lady, she had a very radiant back. I will say that.
Okay.
He gave it a score of 3 out of 10. Zach Landlin watched it. He's the opposite. He described Barrett as agonizing, and the episode was full of lazy shoulder shrugs and half-finished ideas. He gave the episode a D.
And then who takes the blame? Is it the writing though, or is it her kind of thing? That's right. I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt for it because the writing does seem so bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All around. Everyone, look at those reviews. Give them give them clicks. See those reviews. I like reading them afterwards after watching the episode. I don't remember what he had, or I haven't read it yet, but I don't know what he had said about her. I'd assume it would be the same thing. She's not that bad. The script is terrible.
Probably.
And the characterization is bad. Cool. Yeah. So thank you, sir, for watching another one of these episodes. Maybe we'll stumble into a good one eventually.
Hopefully. Eventually. It's got to happen. Law of averages. We got to get to season two here eventually. So, I'll hit one of these good ones, I'm sure.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Go visit Modi's channel. I'll put a little link in the YouTube video. Give this thing a like if you liked what we're talking about. I'm enjoying doing this series. I think it's a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite shows, and it is altogether very enjoyable for me to do this. So thank you for listening. And all right, Mr. Modi, thanks again, and I will see you next time.
Thanks again.